How many days have you woken up feeling that something really special was happening in America? Many of you felt that way on Election Day 4 years ago. Hope and change had a powerful appeal. But tonight, I'd ask a simple question. If you felt that excitement when you voted for Barack Obama, shouldn't you feel that way now that he's President Obama? You know there's something wrong with the kind of job he's done as president when the best feeling you had was the day you voted for him.
Changes. Turn and face the strange. Changes. Don't want to be a richer man. To be a different man, time may change me, but I can't trace time.
Welcome to We Are Libertarians here this week. We're back, all three of us. We're all here on time. Joining us, I'm Chris Spangle. I'm the one of the hosts. My co-hosts are Chris Galt.
Say hey, Chris Spangle.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm great.
Creighton Harrington, how are you doing?
Hey, how's it going?
All right. Very, very exciting intro. Hey.
Woo!
So Thursday night was, without us really knowing about it, was We Are Libertarians night at the Colts game.
Yep.
So.
Yep, we all went to the Colts game.
Nothing like a libertarian podcast going to a publicly funded stadium.
We got to watch 4 minutes of Andrew Luck. And
then 4 minutes of the second string quarterback, and then 48 minutes of the third stringer.
30 seconds of the mascot tackling like a 10-year-old.
Oh, my God. That was the most exciting thing about the fourth preseason game of the Colts opener. They had the mascots. They had the Easter Bunny. They had Santa Claus. They had Thor. And they had a couple others. Playing a little peewee team, and this kid breaks a tackle and runs 50 yards. I mean, 50 yards for like a third grader is a lot. Gets to the second yard line, and Blue tackles him. The Colts mascot tackles him.
What?
Oh, you didn't see it because you and Reno left at halftime. He tackles him at the 2 yard line. The place goes crazy and boos.
Wow.
Why and then,
did he do
like,
that?
And then when he got up, he pushed the little kid's head down into the ground. And like Blue had taken off his jersey and was like in his underwear. So it was extra weird. So he gets up and he basically, Blue's version of flipping off the crowd is taking his like waist and like pushing it forward.
Okay.
So what are you laughing about over there? You're not laughing at my joke. So
I have my phone set up to automatically like go through Google Goggles when you take a picture.
Right. Okay.
So I took a picture of both Chris's for the check-in that I just did, and Google Goggles scanned it and found that it searched for a similar image, which is called Tan Girls. And Tan
what?
Girls is, this is the Tan Girls image.
Take a screenshot what? Of that and put that on the Facebook page. Go to WeAreLibertarians.com to see that photo because that is classic.
Well, I mean,
I don't know why.
He used Google technology to do that, so don't you think it should be posted on Google Plus instead?
I think we need to lose weight. I think maybe it was our boobs that it was our moves that brought about that, because neither one of us are tan, neither one of us are girls, and we certainly are weightlifters. That was arguably a girl.
Okay.
So that was different.
All right.
So yes, it was a fun time. In the fourth quarter, Creighton and his lovely girlfriend came down and sat with us, and Creighton and I held hands, and then my wife got jealous that I had a friend come over and I wasn't paying attention to her. So yeah.
It was exactly right when my girlfriend got mad at me for having people that talk to and not pay as much attention to her.
Yeah, I figured she had that look like, does she listen to this?
No.
Okay. All right.
God,
good.
No.
Then we can talk about them. So.
No, she doesn't.
And then you, sir, are a single bachelor, so you brought Andrew Reno as your date, right?
No, that's not what happened.
Ladies, or you know, dudes, attention. Chris Galt is single. That was your opportunity to give your resume. As an experienced
so,
man of,
what happened
man of love.
This week, you guys?
you guys, we talked about that. We talked about that. That like every time Galt this week posted, he posted that Samsung paid Apple in nickels, the $2 billion in nickels. And like people, like Galt in typical Chris Galt fashion, refused to believe that it was not true and started just drilling and digging in deeper and deeper until people started breaking out like math equations to prove you're wrong.
It wasn't me. And then you it was totally just other people commenting. So we didn't say anything.
We were laughing about my first reaction was like, seems legit.
30 or 60 dump trucks full of nickels.
So Creighton and I were laughing about that and said, you know, that's Chris Galt's move when he just argues until he knows he loses and then he goes, you guys.
Yeah, I like the spoof stuff I post on my Facebook sometimes. It gets people. I don't know. I posted that Ron Paul endorsed Romney after the RNC and...
Because you wanted to rickroll everybody.
I posted one of those fake articles, and it was about Romney's tax returns, and like he paid no taxes 1 year, and he spent like $800,000 on like S&M stuff.
Yeah.
And then like I posted a joke. It was a joke, like an Onion type thing.
The Romney?
Yeah. And people went nuts. They were like, "We trusted you. You're a public trust." I'm like, okay.
I know. Well, I think people should read, not just more than the headline.
Right. I mean, and that's what they do.
They read the headline, they see, and then that's it. And they don't do any looking up of their own. They just trust what people tell them.
We paused real quick. Our friend Abdul Hakim Shabazz from IndiePolitics.org dropped in to record a couple quick things. And so we asked him to stick around for a few minutes just to ask him a couple questions. Because Abdul, you're not only a political commentator and a talk radio show host and a comedian and all kinds of other things. You're also a college professor, right?
Unfortunately, yes. I teach at a couple different places around town. I teach in the Graduate School of Business over at the University of Indianapolis and their MBA program. I teach at Ivy Tech Community College. I teach communications, political science, occasionally English. And I also teach over at Kaplan College, a couple of criminal justice and some sort of life skills study classes. So we got all students, run the gambit, all income, all background levels, the whole nine yards.
So this is a podcast called We're Libertarians. It's for the millennial generation of libertarians. And since you teach college students, what are some of the differences that you notice between our generation and previous generations when it comes to political engagement?
I think fundamentally college students have always been the same regardless. I mean, there will always be a certain number that are a bit more activist, whereas some that are a bit more sort of passive, complacent. I mean, my running joke is when I was in college, I started a group called Students for Apathy, and two people showed up. And so I said, that's it. I'm disassembling this club.
Too many people cared.
Too many people showed up. But I do think part of colleges are sort of reflections of the times, you know, that we live in. You know, we think about, you know my older brothers and sisters, aunts and uncles, you know, a little bit after my mom and dad in the 1960s, we had a lot more sort of turbulent, you know, sort of era. So college campuses were sort of more of a hotbed of activism. You know, go back to the, you know, early 1990s when Bill Clinton kind of showed up. And I think what happens is whenever you get sort of a generational change in American leadership, that's when you tend to see more of the college crowd type of sort of pop up. Like I said, John F. Kennedy in 1960, you know, Bill Clinton 1992, Barack Obama 2008. So, you know, about that 15 to 20 year window when we see like a generational change in presidential leadership, I think you see a lot more activism on, you know, college campuses.
So essentially no Republican inspires the youth. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I think there is. I mean, Ronald Reagan did a lot to inspire a lot of people, in early 1980, you know, sort of Students for Reagan, sort of, which then led to sort of the whole Wall Street, Gordon Gekko type, you know, Alex P. Keaton crowd, if I could use some really dated, you know, 1980s references.
We'll explain that later, kids.
Martin Blackwell.
Just go to Wikipedia.
Right.
All up there anyway. But one of the things that when you look at, you know, are college kids more, you know, apathetic? Are they more activists? You know, I think it really depends. I mean, a lot of people graduated from college, and here's a newsflash. This is nothing really new, you know, that people graduate in a bad economy. People have been graduating in a bad economy, you know, forever. When I graduated out of law school 2002, 2003, the economy was still recovering from 9/11, so there weren't a whole lot of lawyer stuff, you know, kind of floating around. You know, and before that, anybody graduated in 1990, 91, you know, they were hurting for jobs. So for people to think that, you know, they're kind of special because they're graduating from college and there's no job, well, no offense, I hate to be the bad guy here, you're not. I mean, mm-hmm. this is It's cyclical. It happens all the time.
So what sort of political makeup do you notice? Is there – do they fall into the traditional Republican, Democrat, and some libertarians? Or do you find that this generation is a little more willing to look at third parties and other ideas as maybe when you were in college?
I think fundamentally college students nowadays probably tend to lean a bit more libertarian, and then the sense that they don't want people kind of tell them what to do with their personal lives, but at the same time, you know, anybody who's paying attention is kind of really concerned about the fiscal cliff we just seem to be skipping, you know, skipping towards. So I think there's a little bit more of that kind of libertarianship, but I still think there's kind of that, some people sort of expect that activist role, you know, what is government going to do for me? Now, I tend to take a little bit of a different approach. What government can do for me is stop spending all my freaking money and leave me alone. Sure. That's what the government can do for me. Here's the thought. Nothing. But I do think part of the problem you see with college students is also a sort of reflection of the society in general, which is people are just so detached and are just so disenfranchised with the government's workings anyway. It's like, you know what? It doesn't matter. You know what I do. Those politicians are just going to do what they want to do anyway. So I think the opportunity for growth of the Libertarian Party is that if you can really show people, here's why what we do is relevant and here's why it ties to you. You know, we want to leave you alone. We want to let you live your life. We want to take as little money of yours as humanly possible. But at the same time, you're going to have to do more for yourself. Mm-hmm. And I think that message tends to resonate not only with a lot of college kids, but a lot more Americans these days as they become more disenfranchised with my Democratic and Republican friends.
What's your view on the Ron Paul revolution? I mean, where do you think Ron Paul goes from here? And what sort of impact do you think Ron Paul has had on not only, you know, the younger generation, but also the Republican Party?
I'm going to probably get you guys in trouble. But to be really honest with you, I think the Ron Paul revolution, it's got potential, but they haven't quite really mastered what they need to yet because they got sort of outfoxed by the Republicans at the recent Republican convention with the Rules Committee. Because I've been hearing rumblings even like weeks before the convention started, they were getting ready for the Ron Paul people to, you know, kind of show up and, you know, and make hay. So I think for the Ron Paul folks, their best hope and best effort is at the state level, where they've had some successes at the, you know, state conventions and state convention level, you know, maybe doing those sorts of things and maybe fielding candidates, you know, in Republican primaries, you know, in very heavy Republican states, or perhaps in very Democratic, you know, type places, or in places where, you know, Republicans and Democrats are competitive. You know, maybe the Ron Paul people are sort of the new, coupled with the Libertarians, sort of the new third party, where you don't necessarily run to play spoiler, but you run to play to get concessions from, okay, here's what we want to see you do. You know, if you do that, we'll come out for you. And if you screw with us, we'll hold you accountable, you know, in the next election. And I think part of the Ron Paul shortcomings is, and you and I have had this conversation before with certain libertarians, they like sort of the policy and the philosophy,
right?
But they don't want to do the political stuff.
Sure.
It's like, no, if we do the politics thing, then we're no better than Democrats or Republicans. Like, well, here's a newsflash. Obviously, they're winning, so they're...
I have 92 cat scratches from herding over the last week and a half.
Exactly. And I think that's what the people who are very ideologically and philosophically based, they lose out the fact that this is still politics. There's still stuff you got to do. Well, we shouldn't have to compromise. Well, you know, I should be less attractive. But you know what? Not going to happen.
Oh, boy. That's so what – and then I have one final question, and then if you guys want to ask anything of Abdul. Again, Abdul is here in Indianapolis and Indiana. Abdul's well known because we're broadcast on the internet. So we're broadcast in South Carolina with our friends on Rivertown Radio and some other places. Abdul runs IndyPolitics.org, which is the premier place for political news and political gossip, the cheat sheet.
Rumor, and blatant innuendo.
I love when I get my cheat sheet and I get to read all the stuff that you know is probably true but nobody will admit to. And if you guys ever have a tip for Abdul, my favorite thing is that you can write it in an envelope and leave it at Nikki Blaine's on the Circle.
The Scar Martini Bar. Definitely to get it to me.
So check out IndyPolitics.org to check out who Abdul is. If you're in your car on iTunes, you can get it on your favorite podcast app. He has a podcast where he posts his interviews with lawmakers here in Indiana.
When I remember to actually type podcast in the
in the category.
Yeah.
I'll have to talk to you about getting on Stitcher because Stitcher is a great podcast app that we're on as well. So What is your view of the Obama versus Romney versus Gary Johnson race? I mean, how do you see that? How do you see that race ultimately ending up? And what effect do you think Gary Johnson, the Libertarian, will have in this race?
Well, Gary Johnson, last time I read, he was polling like at 16% favorability rating. So he's like 2-3 times higher than Congress. So that's, he's got twice the favorability rating, you know, right, as Congress does. And actually having met Gary Johnson a couple of times when we moderated the Libertarian presidential debate, the guy is really sharp,
mm-hmm,
and really got it together. He's not, quote-unquote, your father's Libertarian candidate, you know, the guy who shows up with long hair, decriminalized pot, and, you know, shut down the military, which has been, unfortunately, the stereotype that Libertarian candidates have had, you know, in the past. So, you know, money, you know, the guy had a few million bucks, he could really make a difference in just playing a lot of, you know, swing, sure, states, because that's where I'd spend my time and energy. As far as the president, Mitt Romney, goes, I really do think that this is a fight for, like I said, it's the undecided voter. It's a fight for my wife's vote.
Right.
Who is the perfect undecided voter. She's voted for Democrats, Libertarians, Republicans. She votes for people, not necessarily parties. And when she watched Mitt Romney's address this past week, she was like, you know, I understand the thing about your mom and how your dad passed away, but I want specifics. You know, mm-hmm, tell me, I mean, I know you guys are going to tell me that Barack Obama is bad, but tell me what you're going to do. And she said something interesting. She was like, I want details.
Right.
I want specific things on how you are going to create these 12 million jobs that you said that you're going to do. Give me details. Give me specifics. And the column I'm getting ready to write, because I write a monthly column for the Annapolis Star, is going to be, you win my wife, you probably win,
right,
you know, the election. For anybody who's in a close race and is fighting for those undecided, and people are wondering, well, how could somebody be undecided in this election? Easy.
So when can I get an interview with your wife and Rupert? So how do you think it ultimately ends up shaking out? I mean, do you see a President Romney or a President Obama or President Johnson? I mean, how do you see it?
If you were to ask me today, I think the popular vote is statistically tied, but I still think the president wins the electoral vote because I don't think Mitt Romney fully made the case as to why you should not vote for the president if you voted for him 4 years ago. Because what the president's people can come back and say is, you know what, when we came in, you know, we inherited this economy, we told you guys it was going to be a mess. You know, we had the bank situation we had to deal with. We had the auto industry we had to deal with. You know, we still have a, you know, a sluggish economy. You know, is it perfect? No. But it's not like we haven't been trying and we haven't been working. So I think the one thing that saves the president in a weird way is sort of the bad economy, because everybody knew just how bad it was since the, mm-hmm, Great Depression. So now the question is, you know, the present policies make it better, make it worse? You know, we could have that argument, because we have had, although it's been almost anemic, but we have had more job growth, you know, over the past 12, 18 months. It's been slow, but we can still point to say it's been job growth. I think the thing for the Republicans is, between now and Election Day, is to really spell out very detailed plans. Here's how we plan to fix America. I understand we're not going to run from the hard issues anymore. I get that. But you still got to – it's like convincing somebody to leave their girlfriend. You got to do two things. You got to convince them, number one, the guy's a jerk, and number two, why you're better.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to do both. And I think the case can easily be made for here's why the president shouldn't be reelected, but they haven't made the case yet why they should get the job.
Oh, I was just going to agree. I think Obama, at this point, Obama's going to win because Mitt Romney and the entire Republican Party really has done an atrocious job at setting a contrast. I'd say nationally, people don't really see Mitt Romney as different than Obama in the sense of a good difference. I think Obama's the one setting the difference by saying this guy's some rich, fat cat Wall Street guy, whereas Mitt Romney, I mean, I still don't think he's gotten away from, you know, Romney care and all that kind of stuff. So I think at this point it's just a matter of the president, the incumbent, always has the advantage, and then Mitt Romney has to set himself different, and I don't think he has. He's just the Republican.
Here's one of the things, and like I said, I go back to my lovely wife, who you met,
mm-hmm,
before.
Oh, yeah.
One of the things that she brought up the other day was, you know, I wish I had money that I could just hide in the Cayman Islands so I wouldn't have to pay taxes.
Right.
I mean, and it's little things that.
We were watching the Romney speech before, and he's talking about taking the kids to Little League. And he's like, when did he ever do that? When did he go to Costco? Really?
Well, and see, the thing is, and I don't think wealth is bad. And if you're Mitt Romney, I would sort of run and I'd embrace it, like, hey, you know what? I've been very blessed, very fortunate that I had a life where I've been able to create wealth and do X, Y, Z, X, Y, Z. But I understand, you know, that not everybody has been as fortunate as I've been. You know, there are people hurting, people struggling in America. What I want to do is use the business acumen and sort of what I've built up, you know, over my lifetime so other Americans can have that opportunity. Sure. I mean, that's how you sell that, you know, that message. And I really do think the Romney people really ought to put out their tax returns because it's those undecided voters and those people like my wife are like, well, why don't you just do it and just be done with it?
Right. Well, Abdul, thanks for joining us here on the podcast and giving us a little bit of your time to talk about the race and kids these days and all the stuff we've talked about.
I mean, fundamentally, I don't think kids today are technically any different than kids have always been. What I do think, though, and this is about to be you know the old, almost nearly sort of kind of in a way, but not really 40-something guy, is when I yell at college students that I don't think necessarily it's an entitlement mentality as it is. Some people have this expectation of, okay, my mom and dad had the, you know, the two-car garage with the four-bedroom house, and so that's what you grew up in. And so when you graduate from college, that's where you expect to start. Whereas they didn't see, you know, when mom and dad were poor and living in that one-bedroom apartment, sure. You know, near the L track where dad went to work while mom went to school and vice versa. Then, oh, my God, you're pregnant with XYZ. Now we got to – I don't think people – fully see or appreciate all the stuff that mom and dad had to get to that point, they think that's sort of where they should start.
They graduate college and they move immediately into a McMansion.
Yeah, it's like, no, my first apartment was a little one studio apartment in Bloomington, Illinois.
Right.
You know.
What is the one thing as a college professor, we have a lot of college listeners, hopefully, what is the one thing you would like as a college professor to say to college students today? What would you really say to them in the classroom if you could get away with
it? The only thing you're entitled to in this life is an ass-kicking, so shut up your whining and man up.
So that is what your college that is what your college professor is thinking as he looks at you. So thank you. Make sure you go to indiepolitics.org, check out all the stuff that Abdul's doing, and thank you for coming in.
My pleasure.
And we're back. So after another brief pause to
the real show gets started.
Let our guest get going. I know we're 20 minutes in and we've barely done anything.
I know.
So the big topic this week is obviously the Republican National Convention.
Oh, yeah.
I was campaigning and working and going to the Colts game, so I barely saw any of it. I went back and I watched Clint Eastwood, and I went back and I watched Chris Christie. And I watched about half of Mitt Romney's speech.
You
but
know what?
That's it.
So why did
Clint
you
Eastwood? Before we get started, anyone who wants to say anything bad about Clint Eastwood, remember you better watch your back because Clint Eastwood is still one of the most awesome mofos on this planet.
If he can remember if you said it, will beat the
Clint Eastwood could give a million bad speeches and he'd still be one of the coolest dudes on the planet. I don't
care. You thought it was a bad speech?
It wasn't terrible. It wasn't as bad as everybody tried to make it out to be. It was still a little bit like
old man.
But, CNN.
It was Clint Eastwood, man. This is the man with no name. This is well, Dirty Harry. I mean, you can't. I don't care. He's awesome.
Well, we watched it before, and I heard a lot of clips of it. I mean, Wolf Blitzer last night on the Situation Room. I was driving around listening to my Sirius and listening to CNN, and Wolf Blitzer was just beside himself at how disrespectful he was to the President of the United States.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't think it was that disrespectful. I thought it was just funny. You know, and most of the delegates seem to as
and
well.
Then with the chair.
And then the Fox pundits think that he was disrespectful to Mitt Romney because
he didn't mention him enough.
Yeah, he didn't mention him enough. He wasn't.
He took his moment. Everybody's talking about Clint Eastwood.
Everybody's talking about Clint Eastwood instead of Mitt Romney.
Well, you know, the funny thing about it is that everybody was freaking out because it was unscripted. I guess he asked for the chair and they thought that it was for him because, you know, Clint Eastwood's like 80. I think he's literally 82. So they thought he was going to sit in the chair and talk to them, sort of like the Super Bowl commercial he did a few years ago where he's sitting there with his hands folded and he's scratched out. And so they didn't have any clue what they were going to do. The Romney campaign gave him talking points And he goes, oh, I appreciate that. And then didn't look at them at all. Didn't the aide sat there and watched him not look. Right?
They just let him say whatever he wanted. But he Ron Paul can't speak unless his speech is vetted.
Right.
Yeah.
And he endorses Romney.
But then Clint Eastwood goes on to talk about getting out of Afghanistan immediately. And the whole delegate.
And everybody cheered.
They cheered. Galt and I were sitting there like,
what?
Is this Bizarro Universe? Or
I like how he said, I agree with Mitt Romney. You know, we shouldn't have given a timetable to get out of Afghanistan. But the reason he agreed with, like, as far as the reason why Romney didn't want to give a timetable, Clint Eastwood would have been like, that's ridiculous, because Clint Eastwood was like, we need to get out tomorrow.
Yeah.
But Romney just didn't ever want to leave.
So it was definitely unpolished. It was definitely unconventional. And I mean that in every sense of the word, because it wasn't scripted. And the same people who complain about how, oh, these things are just scripted and they're just the, you know, your typical dog and pony show, the second someone goes outside of the box and does something different and is off script and goes longer than they're supposed to, everybody freaks out.
Yep.
Even when Clint Eastwood does it, the coolest man alive.
Yeah. No, I mean,
like, Chuck Norris fears Clint Eastwood.
I'm surprised major news outlets, if they hadn't shown the speech. If Fox News or CNN hadn't shown the speech itself, they probably wouldn't have talked about it. Because if you look, I mean, all the paper news media, like all the magazines and stuff, have been talking about the whole delegate situation with Ron Paul and how they just got royally screwed over. And Fox News, I hadn't seen one clip of it on anything anywhere, on like Fox News or on TV news.
Sure.
But, I mean, I feel like if Clint Eastwood's speech it would have been recorded to show later, they just wouldn't have shown it. And all you would have heard about it was in paper news media.
Here, let's listen to a little clip here.
Wow.
Professional.
I'll edit that part out.
No. You can't edit that out.
Oh, I'm editing that out.
That's so irrelevant to the Cole Clint Eastwood speech.
Good idea for attorneys to be president anyway, because
which ironically Mitt has a law degree from Harvard.
Yeah, I think attorneys are so busy, you know, they're always taught to argue everything and always weigh everything and weigh both sides, and they're always devil's advocating this and bifurcating this and bifurcating that, you know, all that stuff. But I think it's maybe time, what do you think, for maybe a businessman? How about that? Yeah. A stellar businessman.
These guys are laughing because they can't hear it.
Quote, unquote, a stellar businessman. And I think it's that time. And I think if you just kind of stepped aside and Mr. Romney can kind of take over, you could still use the plane.
Though
maybe a smaller one, not that big gas guzzler that you're driving around when you're going around to colleges and talking about student loans and stuff like that.
And I think the best part, obviously, is the part that's probably the most quotable is, what? No, I can't tell Mitt Romney to do that to himself. And, of course, everyone and Romney's like, oh, my gosh, I cannot believe he just said that.
And Romney.
She was on... She was on the next day on one of the morning shows, like, I think he's just his own unique individual. Like, totally, like, I don't want to throw him under the bus, but I can't say that I laughed. And, you know, yeah. I don't know. What do you guys think of Ann Romney? I know that she
would, like, be a tyrant of a first lady.
Listen, God bless her. God bless her for the strength that she has to overcome all the things that she has overcome and for raising her five boys. There's just something about her, though, that I just...
Is she going to write
laws?
I don't know. Is she going to write laws or
sign
laws?
No, she's not. She's not Hillary.
I don't care.
So
I don't care then.
All right. Okay. Well, thanks for making that clear. What do you think? Do you care?
I mean, I guess Creighton has a good point. No, I mean,
I don't know. There's just
First Lady has some influence up there. Michelle Obama does stuff. So
I think it's because...
Don't eat that.
I mean...
I think she has that look that Laura Bush always had, which is,
yeah,
I'm just the smiling first lady. Yeah, like, I don't know. I think that's what I liked. I liked Hillary Clinton because she was like, I don't give a crap what he says.
Hill Dog. You like Hill Dog?
Yes, I like Hill Dog. She's fantastic. She's a great guy.
So I think...
There's a sniz in your stooge. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I hate you, dog. Sneeze.
So, since I don't know what they're talking about, I can't laugh.
South Park.
But if we want to move on,
just go to YouTube and look up Hillary Clinton and South Park.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like our listeners are here to learn or to. They want to know about what happened with libertarians and Ron Paul there.
I don't think they
care about Chris Christie. I don't think they want to hear what you thought of Chris Christie's speech. I think they want to know what happened to the Ron Paul delegates.
Really?
Yeah. I think that's what they
want. I'm here and I don't care.
Well,
I'm sort of over it. By the way, I would like to Chris Galt during all that was happening, he and I were texting back and forth. He's like, "Hey, what are you up to?" I'm like, "Oh, you know, just enjoying a big bag of I told you so." He's like, "Shut up." So, hey, how that Ron Paul is going to be our next nominee work out for you, Chris Galt?
Hey, I haven't said that in a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I told you so. So let's get to it. So what happened with Ron Paul? I'm sort of over the Ron Paul revolution. It's time to get on to the Gary Johnson revolution.
Right, but these are still people in our movement. They're still libertarians. They're still people who have fought all this way.
Mm-hmm.
You do realize that like 90% of them said they were going to vote Johnson.
I know. I'm Ron Paul'd out. Like, there's something about like the fact that like this the Republican convention snubbed the Ron Paul delegates. Like, it doesn't infuriate me because I knew, you know, everybody knew it was going to happen. Anybody who wasn't a true believer, I just look at it and I go, well, this is exactly what they thought they would do.
Right. It went according to just like you said. If we got anywhere close to even making an impact, they would change the rules and cheat and be...
And the Libertarian Party kept the lights on, and now you have somebody to vote for in November. So it's... You know, both are valuable. Most, I'm here because of Ron Paul. You two are here because of Ron Paul. So both have value. But I'm just not really all that worked up over what happened at the Republican convention.
Well, I am.
Which is what?
And
so tell
people
us what,
are.
Tell
so,
us what happened.
What happened? Well, the Ron Paul delegates from Nevada tried to nominate Dr. Paul from the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And to do that, you have to have five... states to sign a petition.
Okay.
Or at least before the convention started, that was the rule. So from the floor, Nevada got Minnesota, Maine, Iowa, Oregon, Alaska, the Virgin Islands, and themselves Nevada, which is seven states. Much more than five. So Ron Paul, they should have had a vote for Ron Paul to accept the nomination. You know what I'm saying here?
Mm-hmm.
So... Well, the rules committee of the RNC decided at the spot, right there, right before, right during the petition, that they were going to change the rules. And one of the Mitt Romney's lawyers, I cannot remember his name for some reason, but he came up with a rule change that made it, instead of having, you have to have five states, they made it eight. And eight just happens to be one more than Ron Paul had. Ron Paul had seven, if you count the Virgin Islands. I don't know if that counts as a state.
I think it does, as far as...
I think it does as well in voting power. But, and then, so they just stole that from him right there.
Yeah,
what are you listening to?
I'm listening.
Okay.
Sorry.
So Georgia is reading off their delegates, right?
Uh-huh.
And they say, you know, we've got 70 delegates for the next president of the United States, Mitt Romney. And everybody goes crazy. And you hear some boos, right? And then she goes, and we've got six delegates for Ron. And then they cut off the mic.
Of course.
But that's not the good part. The good part is there was a Republican committeeman on the hot mic.
Committee woman.
No, it was a man.
Are you sure?
It was a man. And he was on the hot mic, and he said, I quote, "Whoever just pulled the mic did a great job." He said that, and it was broadcasted. All these things, all these little things just happen at the RNC, and, you know.
Well, like I said, it's being picked up by paper
but
media,
it's not as like Clint Eastwood is more important than the corruption in the Republican Party.
Because the average American is, I'm sorry to say,
the average American
ADD,
should care about this
has
stuff.
Has ADD and doesn't care. But the thing is reason
made a good point. They were in there, all their articles about the RNC. It's like a lot of this stuff, I think the RNC just thought they were going to get away with it, mm-hmm. but they didn't take into account the fact that we have social media in America now, and anything that happens can be online and distributed to billions of people in like 10 minutes.
They don't even see it that way. I had an interaction with one of the biggest Romney fanboys here in Indiana on Twitter the other day when I, you know, was talking about it. And he basically, and I'll find the tweets and read them off here in a second, but he basically said, well, I really had a lot of respect for Ron Paul until he tried to cheat. And I said, what are you talking about?
We tried to cheat?
When they went through and they tried to just win, instead of overriding the popular vote, they were trying to win by getting more delegates and forcing this. And so
those are your guys' rules. Like, that's not cheating.
Exactly right. I said, you guys are just, they're following the rules that you guys set up. What are you talking about? So,
well, some good news.
Because don't you know when you're raised, I mean, the people elect the president. So, just for our listeners, I'm sure most of you should know this. The people of the United States of America, meaning the Vox Populi, have never, ever, ever in the history of the American country elected the president once, ever. It has never been the people, because the popular vote does not elect the president.
And it's the same way with the parties as well. The delegates elect the presidential candidate.
Yeah, so the Electoral College elects the president. Oh, and funny thing, guess who wanted to end, who was just in the news for wanting to end the Electoral College? One of the people who lost because they lost the electoral vote but won the popular vote.
All right, so here was the exchange.
Who?
George Bush?
No, 2000. Al Gore.
Al Gore
wanted to end the Electoral College because he won the popular vote.
So I tweet out a pro Gary Johnson tweet that says, you don't like what the GOP did to Ron Paul, neither do I. That's why I'm voting for this guy. DK, actually loved what the GOP did to Ron Paul. Showed them that you have to play by the rules, not just have an organized minority. Me, so full of facepalm. How do you defend this? And I link an article about where they disenfranchised all the main delegates. DK, my level of respect for Ron Paul was high, second choice after Mitt until I watched his hijacking of conventions. Me, I guess I am not surprised that a Romney supporter has somehow created a victim narrative despite having billions of dollars and the establishment. So, and that's what they do. They create that they are the victims of some Ron Paul conspiracy, that they overcame the anarchist in the convention, and that their glorious hero Mitt Romney just
comes,
got elected.
What it comes down to is that they, I think a lot of them look at it as, I mean, let's face it, a lot of Mitt Romney support is anti-Obama support, period.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
A majority of Mitt Romney support is people who are just supporting him because they don't like Obama.
Most people don't like Mitt Romney.
So, yeah, it's not really this is the greatest candidate ever and I'm supporting him. No, it's just they don't like Obama. So when they see Ron Paul come in and try and, you know, put, you know,
mm-hmm. and
substance
and,
into
and
the
people
Republican
actually
Party.
Like him and support him.
Yeah,
instead
so they,
of just
they
not
see
liking
it as
Obama.
He can't win. He can't beat Mitt Romney. So all he's doing is distracting he's kind of like dividing the Republican Party when we got this bigger problem to deal with, which is President Obama. When it's like, I'm sorry, but Mitt Romney is not any different than President Obama. Give me a freaking break.
Yes, he is. He wants to repeal and replace Obamacare.
Yeah.
This is
With
Romney Care. This is why I have never believed and I've always advocated that trying to change the Republican Party from within will not work, because they have always and always will treat libertarians like Democrats. That you are nothing but libertarians. But they do.
They look at that
tweet is exactly what they do to the Democrats. And what the Democrats do to them, and whatever, you know, what we do to Republicans and Democrats. They demonize the other side. They sit there and they say, you know, well, we're the victims of some sort of horrible plot to take over the party, so we must fight and keep them out and win at all costs.
Well,
so they do. And guess what? You're never going to, you will influence policy and you will get wins by getting them to audit the Fed, or at least say they're going to audit the Fed. But again, libertarians are falling for it again. Okay, they say they're going to do something. They say they're going to audit the Fed. They say they're going to put a rein on Ben Bernanke. But guess what? They're probably not going to, because they never follow through on their promises.
Well, I don't think anyone who has been a Ron Paul supporter or part of the real Tea Party, I don't think any of them buy that anything that the Republican Party says they're going to do is going to get done unless they keep you know, trying to get them to do it. I haven't felt that that is the mindset that many of them have. I mean, I know I sure don't.
No.
And I feel like I'm a little bit representative of at least some part of this whole anti-mainstream Republican movement.
Right. Did you see what Paul said to Bloomberg after the RNC? No? Neither of you?
No.
He said,
My tolerance for listening to Michael Bloomberg is very low.
Yeah. Well, Paul said the Republican Party is not my party. He said, I don't like politics anymore.
Yeah.
Ron Paul said that?
Yeah, he said, I think both parties are Keynesian economists and support positions that I don't like, so the party in many ways is irrelevant.
Yeah. And I mean, but at the same on the other hand, I mean, you had Rand Paul go in front of the RNC on national television vision and give a speech and straight up tell all of them, if you don't think that we can cut spending from the military, then you're kidding yourselves.
Mm-hmm.
In front of everybody, and he's respected as a Republican. Not
yeah, but
so
those
much.
People
he's the Tea Party. He's kind of respected as a Republican, so he's towing that line of being a mainstream Republican, but at the same time be a Tea Party guy. And I think he's doing an okay job at it, and he's very much upset a lot of Ron Paul supporters. But I mean, think about that. Could you just put that in a vacuum for a second? Would they have ever even let, you know, a person with a sign near the building that said something even remotely close to that?
But it's vanity. That is the point. It is wonderful that Eastwood and Rand Paul get to go up there and say those things, but it doesn't change any of those people's minds.
But this, at the same
time, it does not change the mind
of
the guy with the elephant on the top of his head.
But at the same time, I mean, it may be a show. It may be just all the real stuff gets done behind the scenes, and this is just like a show. But somebody then let him go out there and put on the show and say that, and it's not like he hasn't, you know, put his money where his mouth is. He's put laws in. He's voted to cut military spending, balance the budget in 5 years.
But what you said is very important. Somebody let him do that.
Well,
and
I'm
at
just
some
saying.
Point they will revoke that power. And
but that's just
need to learn that we are them, and that
they didn't let Ron Paul speak.
I know they didn't let Ron Paul
speak. So you're fine with it because they let Rand Paul speak.
No, I'm not. Ron Paul chose not to speak.
Don't misunderstand
me. No, they didn't let Ron Paul speak.
They didn't let Ron, and I have a ton of respect for Ron Paul because he chose not to speak. Let's be clear. They told him, you're going to do it on our terms. We're going to vet your speech, and you're essentially going to have to endorse Romney when you give your speech. And he said, well, shove it up your A because I'm not going to do it.
Right.
No, I mean, don't get me wrong.
But they didn't do that to other people. They just knew that Paul was going to go up there and talk about the Fed and talk about ending the wars, and they didn't want him to do that.
He wasn't going to go and talk about what an amazing human being Mitt Romney is because that's what they had to do. He's not a robot. He's not made out of plastic. He's a regular person. I just don't – I feel like after this week, this has been a test for most libertarians and for liberty-minded Republicans especially. Are you going to be seduced by the Republican Party again, or are you not?
Well,
because just like the clip that we played at the beginning of the show, there are a couple lines in Romney's speech, and let me play one for you now. We played the one earlier where basically if the only time you've ever felt good about Obama is when you voted for him, or the clip I'm going to play here is they're seductive because they're lines that we typically would agree with. These are powerful lines that people are going to remember.
President Obama promised to begin to slow the rise of the oceans. And to heal the planet. My promise is to help you and your family.
Now, those are lines like, well, there you go again. Those are lines that people remember for a long time because they are good lines. They're very powerful lines, but again, they're words.
Yes.
And, you know, that is really one of those things that people look at and you go, man, you know, they're just talking the right talk. But we can never forget. You must never, ever forget, Chris and Creighton, never forget that they're only words. Because when I listen to Paul Ryan, I don't hear him say, here's how life will be better for Americans with almost no government. I hear him say, life will be better for you as an American when Republicans are in charge.
No, I know what you're saying, but that doesn't mean you have to completely ignore the fact that that people who have libertarian philosophy, that the Ron Paul faction and all these various people who may not consider themselves Ron Paul people, but they're against maybe as much war as we're in. We have made inroads. Because the fact that they're even talking about that in the Republican Party at
all. But they're not doing anything about it.
It does, but
you can talk about it all. They'll talk about it for 10 years. The next 10 years.
So
you'll never do anything. You'll just keep thinking you're winning because
they
talk about
it. No, that's not what I'm saying at all. I'm saying that the fact that they are talking about it shows that there are inroads being made.
No.
But to say that means we have to stop even trying anything, no, that's not what I'm saying. But to ignore that saying something about it is a big deal in politics is
Could it be that they are talking about it because they don't want to lose the Ron Paul vote before the election?
No. That may be
the
case.
Is it possible that they're placating libertarians?
That may be what they're trying to do. But at the same time,
I mean,
they
all right,
that means they have to recognize that there is a strong base, a strong portion of the Republican Party that does not support neoconservative ideals. Mm-hmm. And regardless of whether or not it's top down or anything, the base is what kind of sets what the Republican Party does. And for the most part, the agenda is set at the top and the base kind of just goes along because they're that's the party. But there are times where the base just basically revolts against something that the party has stood for, and the party has to either mold itself, it has to change,
right,
or it dies.
But we're saying,
and I think we're in one of those times where
the
base is
not...
I think we're in one of the times where the base, the Republican base, the people who are going to call themselves Republicans in the future, their philosophy is changing in such a way that the Republican Party has to change from the bottom up, or it's going to die.
But my point is that Paul Ryan and Mitt Romney are two people that the 2008 Tea Party warned themselves against the 2012 Republican ticket. You have at the top of the ticket a guy who is, you know, Tea Partiers are what? They're very fiscally conservative. Most of them are very socially conservative. So they have a guy on the top of the ticket who is shaky on abortion and basically invented Obamacare, and as vice presidential candidate voted for Medicare Part D, voted for No Child Left Behind, voted for Bush tax increases. These are the two guys that the 2008 Tea Party warned about. They didn't reform themselves, and now they're all behind Mitt Romney, and they're all behind Paul Ryan, and they fooled themselves.
I think if the enthusiasm of 2010 was behind a single candidate for president, then there would be no contest between that person and Barack Obama. But the fact that Mitt Romney is probably going to lose, even though he got a bump from this speech, Obama's going to get an equal bump after the DNC this week, and it's going to be back to Obama in the lead. The fact that Mitt Romney is not in a huge lead just shows that enthusiasm of the Tea Party is not behind the candidate the Republicans have picked, because they are disenfranchised just as they were over any other candidate that would have been the antithesis of everything the Tea Party stood for.
I'm saying that a base revolt still did not keep these two from becoming the nominee.
I don't think it's time to say that it's over. I mean, we're assuming that with 2012 is
Ron Paul
when,
can still win.
No, that's not, what I'm saying.
He has a special announcement next week.
I'm saying that because the 2012 presidential campaign is essentially now between the Mitt Romney and Barack Obama, that doesn't mean that the whole Tea Party / libertarian base part of the Republican Party is done trying to do anything and change national politics, and because we're assuming that because the Republican Party didn't give in to the libertarian base doesn't mean that in the future that they have won. It just means that we've lost one battle.
The youthful hopefulness.
The only reason
I remember when I was young and hoped and was not totally what is the word, the C word that I can't think of, cynical. Oh yeah, cynical. So I look at it, and I look at you, Creighton, and I wish I could be like you.
You wish you when you were young and cynical?
When I was young and hopeful. Now I'm old and cynical. I'm so cynical that the only time I've been outraged in the last week is when KFC took mac and cheese off their menu.
No, Creighton, the only reason I can even agree with you a little bit on this, you keep saying the Republican Party base, and I would like to say Ron Paul libertarians are not the Republican Party base.
Right.
They're not
the Republican Party base. Are neoconservatives? They are social conservatives.
To an extent,
the people that are in the leadership in the GOP, the base of the GOP is that That's a much higher percentage
yes,
than we are.
Okay, the Republican Party base,
right.
In the sense of the people that make up it, it's not totally Ron Paul people or Tea Party people like Libertarian. I'm not disagreeing.
But the
with
only
that.
Reason I agree with you is because I saw what Morton Blackwell said yesterday, and he to me is someone in the Republican Party base. He is someone in that has influence and power in the Republican Party. And he came out against the corruption RNC.
He said the worst rules that he's ever seen.
Yeah, he said it was like the worst convention in history of the Republican Party by the corruption standards. And I don't know. That's the only good sign I saw that came out of the RNC. I didn't think they never talked about Rand Paul's speech outside of that. The only thing I saw good was that Morton Blackwell stood up and said something. And I met him at CPAC.
Yeah, he's pretty cool. The way I'm kind of reading this whole convention is it's like when somebody knows that they're losing, they freak the F out and they do everything 10 times as bad because they're freaking out.
Right.
I feel like that's kind of like what the Republican Party establishment may be doing. It's like they're realizing that they're losing, you know, their grip on the philosophy of the Republican Party, and it's changing to something they don't want it to be, so they're freaking out and they're just going overboard and they're pushing people like Mitt Romney to the top and they're doing these rule changes because they're freaking out. And that, if anything, you could say that means that, you know, we're having more of an effect than I think people want to admit.
Well, I mean, effect is when the votes change and when we actually pass policy. If audit the Fed can't pass, then we're not affecting
anything. Well,
audit
anything. The Fed passed the House, and it
that,
won't pass
that doesn't mean anything.
But it didn't pass because of Harry Reid in
okay,
the Senate.
Then we're not changing anything.
Well, that
we haven't changed
are we
ta- one
are
thing.
Are we talking about Republican Party politics? Or are we
that's
talking
what you're
about,
talking about.
Okay, but if we're going to equate that audit the Fed didn't pass because of Harry Reid,
I mean,
and talking
but what
about
are the Republican
RNC?
Successes? What are the Republican Party's success in Congress over the last 8 years?
Their successes?
Yes. The Patriot Act?
No, I'm not saying the Republican Party
in total. What libertarian bill has the Republican Party passed since we've started influencing them?
Nothing. I'm not saying that.
We're not doing anything.
You're looking at like the first stretch of a 3-mile race and saying that because we're in last place, we've lost the race. I mean, think about it. I mean, we, me and you, we're in our young 20s. I'm 22 years old. You're 21, right?
Right.
Okay. We have a good 50 years ahead of us.
I don't know.
A good 50 years ahead of us.
I feel like we've only got a good 5 until...
There's going to be so much demographic change. There's going to be so much change in front of us that we're going to be a part of, you know, making it our own. And you're saying that because one election where one guy who is the antithesis of everything we stand for is trying to be pushed down our throat as something he's not means that we are losing because maybe some people are buying into it. And I think that's ridiculous. That I mean, we have – just because right now the Republican Party is not made up of libertarians and it's not the Libertarian Party doesn't mean that everything that we've done is for
right.
nil.
I don't mean that everything we've done is for nil. I mean in changing the Republican Party. We've done almost no change to the Republican Party.
I think you're calling it quits too early.
No, I think we've changed the rhetoric and dialogue between citizens and the what people are talking about and issues that are being brought up, but I mean,
think about
what
it this
have
way.
We changed?
Think about it this way.
Okay, we took over the Iowa GOP and the Maine GOP.
No, but
right?
Look at it this way.
You have
Thomas Massie in Kentucky, who's going to be a good
nothing
Republican.
Federal wise.
You have Justin Thomas Massie's running for U.S. House.
Okay,
he's probably going to win.
Okay.
He's good. Ted Cruz is good. Justin Amash is good. Mike Lee is good. These people are good politicians that have been basically vetted by the Libertarian base of the Republican Party, the Libertarian portion, and they're going to go to Congress. No. Are they going to be able to basically tell John Boehner, you do what we want to do or you're done? Of course not. But this is 1 2-year election. 2 years from now, you're going to have more people like that. It, I mean, just because at this election we haven't changed the Republican Party to being the Libertarian Party doesn't mean that we have had no effect and that we're not making an effect. And I think you're basically just calling it quits before, and you're saying this strategy is not worth it because it didn't work in 4 years.
I feel like the Republican Party's killing themselves, and I don't think that the Libertarian movement should stay involved in that. I feel like they should let them commit suicide. And
I think the reason they're committing suicide is because they're basically revolting against. Right. They're trying their hardest to revolt against the Libertarian
so
base.
So let's just leave them and let them die.
But I don't think that's going to work.
Why?
Because I think that the way things are set up, that there is not it's less work, and it would happen quicker to let them kill themselves and people with libertarian philosophy take over. And I know that sounds like very naive. But compared to making a third party run,
there have been party changes in history.
I understand that. There have been two. There have been the Whigs took over for the Federalists, where the Federalists died, and then the Whigs died and turned into the Democrats. Or I guess they turn into
right.
Republicans.
So the Republicans can die and turn into the Libertarians.
Yes, but at this, but
I mean, we don't have to continually
be
this.
The thing is the Federalist to the Whig to the Republican were essentially the same in philosophy.
All right,
they really were.
So if you're
talking about a fundamentally different style, I mean, don't forget this is long before tons of changes to how elections were run. Before, I mean, you're talking about a time when senators were elected by state legislators.
But if you're a person who believes in fiscal responsibility, but believes in the Christian values being legislated, where would you go if the Republican Party becomes libertarian?
Where
would you go?
I mean, you'd probably stay in the Republican Party.
Why?
But why?
If they don't believe in your social issues.
Because people, 90% of the time in America, when it comes down to their vote, they vote on their pocket and their belly.
No.
When they get active, there are two parties,
and they try to market themselves as opposites. What is the opposite of on, off? What is the opposite of Republican, Democrat? That's like on a paper, even though they're not. But if you make the Republicans libertarian, and you have social issues that Democrats might agree with, I mean.
But we talked about this last
week. That's not going to work.
We talked about this last week.
You can't just have two parties if you don't encompass an entire section of America.
We talked about this last week. The social conservative portion of America
just disappear.
But it's dying.
It's still there.
But it's dying.
It's still a high percentage.
It's
and it'll
dying.
Still be.
And you want to know who the high percentage is? Old people. That's who it is.
There are still young social conservatives.
They are, but to say that that is representative of the entire demographic of the youth.
I did not say
that. But that's what's implied by saying.
No,
yes.
Because
we talked about this last week. Before Pat Robertson, last week we pointed out that before Pat Robertson, the idea of social conservative didn't necessarily exist the way that you think, the way that we see it now. Before the Pat Robertson revolution, social conservatism didn't really have too much of an effect. Conservative was more on fiscal and individual rights.
Right.
Now, the fact that it changed from 1990 to now to be more focused on social issues is, I think, a product of that generation of people. And that generation of people aren't going to be here forever. Our generation is going to take over, and you cannot deny that our generation, compared to, say, people in their 60s, are enormously less socially conservative. Enormously. And that's not just a matter of, most of them are Democrats. Almost all of them are less socially conservative. To say that because the Republican Party tends to be more socially conservative means that we must not waste any effort and go to something that is more catered to people who aren't so socially conservative, I think is just a neglect to history. Because the conservatives of American history, by and large, had been, their social conservatism was, you're Christian. And that was about it. The type of Christian didn't – you were Protestant, I guess. You had to be Protestant Christian.
Right.
And that was pretty much it. And to say that Protestant Christians even agree with themselves on everything is a misnomer. So
I feel like taking over the Republican Party, we're losing out on an entire section of libertarians that may describe themselves more with the left that will not want to associate with the Republican Party. The libertarians are different than Republicans. They are.
No, I know.
They're different than Democrats. We should be our own. We're not in. I mean, I don't understand why we want to be controlled by this giant Republican Party. That's all.
I guess I see it as a tool,
but they're only going to let you do so much as you don't affect anything.
But I don't.
The minute we have more libertarian congressmen than Republicans, or your libertarian Republican congressman, that's never going to happen.
I don't see that the Republican higher-ups will be able to control it the way they have if this essentially grassroots mentality continues. I don't see them as being able to do it.
I don't think it can continue without Ron Paul.
I think it can. I honestly think it can. Ron Paul was obviously the face, but I don't think that
there are way too many people that were just Ron Paul or no one. I feel like.
Yeah, but that's. But you also got
to. There are still people on Facebook telling Ron Paul to run third party, even though you can't, because it's against the rules. You can't be a sore loser and run as another party. But they're still saying it. You know, he's going to announce next week he's running third party, and Gary Johnson's going to step down. Like, well, no,
but
that's
even
not going to happen.
Even that's like what you're saying is that because most people were Ron Paul or no one. How does that play into your point that we need to put all of our effort into a third party? I mean, where's the logical jump there?
I don't get your question, I guess.
It sounds like you're trying to say that because a lot of this enthusiasm for libertarian philosophy.
No, you said the grassroots movement was going to continue, and all I said was I don't think it will.
Well, I think it will.
I hope it will.
But if you don't think it will, then how are you at making any better of a point to say that we should go third party than to say that we should just try and basically remove people with bad positions out of the Republican Party?
The grassroots will not continue in the Republican Party. If Rand Paul says he's running for president in 2016, I could see some grassroots coming back in the Republican Party.
I don't know.
He lost 20% with his endorsement of Mitt Romney. I know it might have been the right move or whatever, but he still lost 20% of Ron Paul's movement, I would say, if I had to put a number on it. And that's just slowly but surely, like Adam Kokesh.
Adam Kokesh is crazy.
I mean, Jack Hunter.
What about Jack
Hunter? I mean, things that these people say, they lose a percent. No one is making the movement bigger than Ron Paul made it. Everyone is only sectioning out certain segments of Ron Paul's. Ron Paul was the only one that brought them all and didn't make anyone else really angry.
That's true, besides some super anarchists, maybe. True to an extent. But at the same time, you also have to put it in perspective. Ron Paul did it before. He ran as a libertarian before.
Right, but
he's tried to do this before, and it didn't work. What was different
in 1988 than today? We didn't have an entire movement that was sick of American politics.
Exactly.
If he would have ran as libertarian
this year, it
would have been totally different. He would have had a whole year to prepare, to raise money. He wouldn't have had to fight the Republican Party to get a nomination.
You're proving my point.
He would have easily had enough percentage to get into the debates.
You're proving my point. My point is that what was different between 1988 and now, and you said the times, what Americans at grassroots were feeling.
And in 2016 is going to be different than 2010.
He came along, he was able, and what I'm trying to say is that there is a significant movement, and it was growing before Ron Paul stepped up and ran as the face of it. And I think that there are plenty of people out there that are going to have this feeling, that they're going to have this philosophy for the future, and Ron Paul leaving is going to be it's going to make some people be less involved. I would be lying if I said I didn't think that would happen to an extent. But at the same time, it's not just Ron Paul. It wasn't just people hanging on his coattails. It was people at the grassroots actually started to feel this stuff, and then they saw Ron Paul as the guy that was being the face of it. And I think that we've made a lot more gains in the Republican Party than we have in the Libertarian Party. Because, look, I mean, I already named it. Justin Amash has gotten elected. Thomas Massey's probably going to get elected. Mike Lee's already been elected. That right. dude from Florida, what's his name? I mean, he's not bad. He's gonna right. he's gotten elected. I mean, these
how
people
much,
are
how
in
much
the
effort
party.
Have people put into the Libertarian Party?
But
I mean, if that much effort would have been put into the Libertarian Party, you don't know
well,
that.
If
I mean, you can say that we stay with the Republican Party because that's where we put our effort already, even though they're casting us out and keeping us separate and, you know, not letting our people
they're
speak.
They're casting out Ron
and,
Paul people.
Right.
But it's not just about Ron Paul people. It's I about mean, the whole freaking philosophy, getting into government and making a difference.
All right. I think we get your point, and I think they get my point. So, I mean, let's talk. We're over, but I want to talk a little bit about some events coming up because all summer we kind of were like, no, we don't have any events. No, we don't have any events. And now semester started, so now we have events again. do you want to talk about October 3rd and the econ debate?
Young Americans for Liberty and IUPUI, which, again, is not affiliated with this podcast in any way, shape, or form, is going to have an event co-sponsored with the Intercollegiate Studies Institute, which is a pretty good nonprofit organization. I mentioned them last week. They were founded by one of the founders was Bill Buckley, who is a prominent historical conservative in the 20th century. So, but they're pretty good as far as, you know, libertarian quote, quote philosophy. But we're co-sponsoring with them, and it's going to be, Robert Murphy, who is an economist who's from, he does various things. He's kind of economist from the Mises Institute, I think is where a lot of people would recognize him. Then we have, Richard Brake of ISI, who's going to be, the center of the road kind of guy. And then, we have Mark Bilodeau, who is a professor at IUPUI, an econ professor, and he's going to be the socialist perspective. So it's going to be Robert Murphy, the free market slash libertarian, Richard Brake, the centrist slash mixed economy slash conservative. He was kind of hesitant to call it himself a centrist, but he's kind of being the middle road guy, the mixed economy guy, and then we have the socialist from IUPUI, and they're all going to debate the morality of capitalism. Or I wouldn't say debate necessarily as much as discuss. They're each getting 30 minutes to give their points, and then there's a 30-minute question and answer at the end. But it's going to be over it's called Is Capitalism Moral? A discussion on the ethical implications of capitalism. So it's going to be really fun. Lots of.
So it'll be set up a lot like our Civil Liberties tour. So if anybody went to that, you'll probably enjoy this event as well.
And it's October 3rd at 6 p.m. at the Campus Center.
Civil Liberties was highlighted in the last, and now we want to hit the right end of it, of libertarianism, and hit the econ part.
Yes.
That's Creighton's forte. So on October 4th, I guess I've let a little information out, but Gary Johnson will be visiting IUPUI on October 4th, so save the date. More information will come later on event details, location, time, other people and speakers coming, but he will be in Indianapolis at IUPUI on October 4th, so save that date for later.
So that's 2 days in a row of stuff to go to.
2 days in a row of liberty, and both of them are both of them are going to be really good, and you don't want to miss either of them. I'm going to Gary Johnson on Thursday, so I guess I'm not going to go to the econ debate.
Yeah.
Or so I'm going to the econ debate on Wednesday, so I guess should go to both.
You really should. We have an event page for the econ debate on Young Americans for Liberty at IUPUI's Facebook page. So go to that, and then you can get updates and stuff. Well,
yep.
I mean, the promotion is going to be primarily on IUPUI's campus and through ISI itself. So, I mean, you're not going to find, like, an advertisement on TV or something.
Do you need to register for it?
You don't necessarily have to RSVP. You can go to the event through the Facebook page. It's open to the public. But yeah, it's going to be free, so you can just show up.
Great.
And that would be awesome. If there's standing room only, I'd like it.
Yeah. Well, I'll have more news on Gary Johnson probably next week's podcast, but we'll see. So,
cool.
I think that wraps up our podcast for this week.
Chris Spangle had to.
You didn't notice, Chris Spangle jumped out.
He did sit.
He's teaching some of the LPIN candidates how to debate So thank you for joining us on We Are Libertarians this week, and we'll see you around.
Yeah, boy.
All right. No. Don't do that.
No.
All right, ready?
No.
This podcast is produced by What Is a Hoosier Productions.